are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, October the 13th, and almost legends and some guys who might be almost Pistons right now. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com. Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. We got a lot of help today, so we're going to get right into it. We got Brian with the Almost Legends series. A tough one, a good one that's going to be tough to top for me. This is one of my favorite random Pistons of all time, and looking forward to hearing the take from Brother Brian on this. And we also, as promised, have another excerpt from Hollinger and Duncan. I just heard this episode last at the end of last week and thought this would be a perfect one for you guys to hear. Not only because we want to pimp the shows on the network and have you guys check those out as well, but also because I just think there's some really good information for Pistons fans to kind of digest as we start thinking about the offseason, which is finally here, right? We made it. The season finale has ended. We are actually in the offseason now, which I guess is different. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also, Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook, but let's get right into it and hear what Brian has to say about a Detroiter and one of the great random Pistons of all time.
We had to do it eventually. We broke one of our rules for this Almost Legends series, as this player has won a championship with the Pistons. But that was for his second of three stints with the team, and far from his longest. He was a key piece in the highest scoring game in franchise and league history, plus his DNA is literally all over several eras in Pistons history. On this episode of Pistons Almost Legends. Growing up in Romulus, Michigan, John Long decided to stay close to home and attend the University of Detroit and play for new coach Dick Vitale. While at U of D, Long led the team to the NCAA tournament his junior season. Partly because the Pistons had just hired Vitale, his former coach at the University of Detroit, they selected the 6'5" shooting guard in the second round of the 1978 draft. Long's rookie year with Detroit was an individual success, if not a team one. Averaging over 16 points in 30 minutes a night, he trailed just Bob Lanier and ML Carr in points. 12 games into his second season with the Pistons, coach Dick Vitale was fired due to a slow start, which was exacerbated by a move that offseason sending ML Carr and two first-round picks over to Boston in return for injured veteran Bob McAdoo. As an aside, the Celtics were able to turn those two picks into Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale, both key components that would begin to team the following year with rookie Larry Bird to win three world championships in the 80s. Long improved his scoring to over 19 points per game his second year, trailing just Lanier and McAdoo on the team in points, although the Pistons did limp to a league-worst record. His third season, he saw his points fall to under 18 per game, but it led the team, but that team only had 21 wins. Because of their poor showing and some savvy front office moves, the Pistons were able to add rookies Isaiah Thomas and Kelly Trepuka, along with newcomer Bill Lambeer, and that helped Long immensely. His points per game blossomed to a career-high 21.9 and helping lead the new-look Pistons to an 18-game turnaround with 39 wins. The 82-83 season saw Long starting to lose minutes and his starting spot to new Piston Vinnie Johnson. The team saw a slight decline in wins and losses, and Long saw his points per game cut in half. That brings us to the 83-84 season, and in his first year with the Pistons, head coach Chuck Daly led the team to a 49-33 record and their first trip to the playoffs after six postseasonless seasons. Long reclaimed his starting spot, starting all 82 games and averaging over 16 points per game. The most notable game of that regular season came on December 13th, 1983 in Denver to play the Nuggets. things were looking better than good early in the second half for Long.
Isaiah comes to forecourt to John Long, screened by Lambeer, left side, glass for good. John Long, folks, is now 10 for 10 from the floor.
A perfect 10, John Long.
Yeah. He and Bo.
And the shots just kept falling.
Dennis looking for Long and finds it. John fires. Gets it. He's still perfect on the night.
He is unconscious tonight.
14 for 14 for John Long. Pistons within three. A minute and 50 to play in the third quarter.
Long would finish the game 18 for 25 for 41 points, trailing just Isaiah Thomas's 47 for the Pistons in what still is the NBA game with the most points ever scored, and a Pistons triple overtime victory 186 to 184. Battling through injuries and starting to come off the bench again, Long saw his production fall the following season. After that year, the final nail in the coffin that was his fledgling Pistons career came as Detroit selected future Hall of Famer Joe Dumars in the draft to pair with Captain Isaiah Thomas in a championship backcourt that would be in Detroit for years. Long did play that season with the Pistons, coming off the bench and still contributing 10 points a night, but the writing was on the wall. His time in Detroit was done, at least for now, and the Pistons shipped him off for a few draft picks just before the 86-87 season. Having played 8 years in Detroit and averaging in double digits in each of those seasons, after 2 seasons in Indiana, Long once again found himself on the Pistons after the Pacers waived him halfway through the season. Long never really made a significant contribution on that team on the floor as he was outside of the usual rotation. He was awarded a championship ring as a member of the first Bad Boys title. Long would play for the Atlanta Hawks for part of a season before coming back to Detroit for 25 games in the 90-91 season, his last in the NBA. Until a few years after playing overseas and in lesser leagues, Long was signed by the Raptors for the 96-97 season when he was the second oldest player in the league behind Robert Parrish. Interestingly, that last season with the Raptors, Long played in 2 games versus the Pistons, whose roster included Grant Long and Terry Mills, both nephews of Long. Nephew Grant remembers learning a lot from his uncle about longevity in the league, as he told host Matt Shook last year.
Well, you know, it was outstanding. He paved the way for me to have an appreciation for taking care of yourself. I wanted to play until I was 40. That just didn't happen for me. But he gave me the insight. He gave me the wherewithal and the thought process to say, you can play this game as long as you keep yourself in shape, as long as you stay tough. He gave me the wherewithal to have that vision because he did it. And I can tell you another story behind that. He was actually retired, I believe, and his former teammate, Isaiah Thomas, if you remember, was part of the Toronto Raptors. And he felt so good and felt strongly about my Uncle John and his work habits and how professional he went about his business as an NBA player. He wanted that to be in the locker room of the Toronto Raptors. And he called him up and said, hey, would you come in and do what you do? You know, be the leader, be a professional, be a pro like you've always been, and show this young group that I'm dealing with, you know, what it takes to be a professional day in and day out. And my Uncle John was up to that challenge, and Isaiah brought him in to do just that. And he worked with a lot of young players, Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter, all of those guys. He worked with them and helped them along the way.
Long retired after the 96-97 season, his 15th in the league. Scoring over 12,000 points in his career puts him ahead of names like Danny Ainge and Mookie Blaylock. After his playing career, Long went on the radio for years to pair with Mark Champion to call Piston games. So because he grew up in Detroit, played college basketball in Detroit, began and had his best professional years in Detroit, and won a title in Detroit, John Long is a Pistons almost legend.
It doesn't get much more random and much more impressive on a not Jersey in the Rafters scale for John Long. All the coincidences, all the lineage, all the legacy, just an amazing. I love it because John Long, the prime of his career is a little bit before my time, so I don't remember John Long really contributing to the Pistons much at all in terms of my personal memory. But I grew up going to U of D games as a kid, went to Callahan Hall with Joe Denowith and his dad basically every Saturday during the season to watch guys like Tony Tolbert and Jermaine Jackson play for the Titans at Callahan Hall. And, of course, we'd go out to the hallway and see the legends list of Terry Tyler and John Long and Dick Vitale and all those guys that had the huge success for UAD back in the day. So John Long, an almost legend, no doubt about it, and we'd love to have him on. So if anyone knows John out there, get in touch with me. And we've had Terry Mills on, we've had Grant Long on, but it would be good to get Uncle John on to the show. But up next, we are going to hear from Hollinger and Duncan to give us a kind of a preview of some players who might end up in the red, white, and blue next year. That's coming up next year on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, chain stores, sometimes they offer the different price tiers for the pro mechanics and the do-it-yourselfers. That's not going to happen at rockauto.com. It's a family business. It's been serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet for your ride. Whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and the prices that you'd prefer. Best of all, those prices at rockauto.com, they're always reliably low, and the same for the pros as the do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. I'm telling you, you're going to find something. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car will ever need, rockauto.com. I'm telling you guys, I got a sample of Built Go in the mail from the company. Really appreciate that. And I play tennis on Monday nights, trying to get back into shape. It is difficult. I'm recording this podcast after tennis. I'm a little bit lightheaded. That's just how it goes when you're so washed like I am. But it's a wall that I got to get through to get that energy back for that evening time on the courts. Built Go is the healthy replacement for your energy drink, but the energy is not fake. It's lasting and natural. It's been almost literally a lifesaver for me to be able to pick up my energy at that time of night. And I'm telling you, it's going to help you break through your wall as well. Whether it's a mental or a physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Built Go is easy to take around in 1.5-ounce packages. Put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever. Put it in your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market, and it tastes great. Three delicious flavors, peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint as well. And how does Built Go work so well? Well, Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into my system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work. They got the beta alanine, the B3, the honey, and a kick of caffeine as well. Built Go then kicks to keep me going strong. B6, 10,000% of your daily percentage of B12, so that's taken care of, and then some. But the collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes your boy look better. There's no doubt about that. But visit builtgo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go!
Yes, sir!
John and I both are salary cap experts. We follow things very closely with that, and with now very likely the tax going to be lower than anticipated, this was not a big cap space year anyway. We want to talk about which contracts are most likely to get dumped this offseason. Maybe we'll say over the next year, going through the trade deadline, whether that's because teams want to open up 2021 cap space, or perhaps more likely just to dodge the tax in 2021, or even open up space to use the full mid-level exception while staying under the tax, which I think reduction in the projected cap for this year, we're going to say it's going to be about 109 rather than the 115 they thought it would be before this. So let's just talk in general about some of the types of teams that might be looking to dump these contracts and the overall economic situation in the league right now.
Yeah, I mean, number one, I think you have the taxpayers, right? They're the ones who have the most incentive, especially the teams who are kind of deep in the tax. So you look at a team like Boston, right? Enes Kanter, he's probably going to opt in $5 million. He's going to play like 8 minutes a game.
At least in the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Vincent Poirier, hope I did that right for all the Frenchmen out there. You know, $2.6 million, he's never going to play. Like, they got to get rid of that contract. You look at Brooklyn. Could they do something with Torian Prince, who's making $12 million and pays the same position as Kevin Durant? You know, you kind of look back at that and say, did they really need to do that extension? Like, what was going on there? I think, I don't know if they're quite in salary dumping situation, but Denver's in an interesting situation. They don't have that much room from the tax line. I don't think they're going to pay the tax. I don't know if it's going to be a contract that gets quote unquote dumped as much as traded, but Gary Harris at $19 million, I think that's definitely something that they would like to convert into something different maybe.
Yeah.
So that's one that you certainly have your eye on. I think Golden State, I think Kevon Looney at 4.8 is probably a luxury they cannot afford right now. So I think that one is really interesting. The contract that will not be dumped, even though they would probably like to, is the Houston Rockets Eric Gordon extension, right? $55 million guaranteed over the next 3 years. And they're right at the tax line once again. They really painted themselves into a corner needlessly with that deal. I think that was a big mistake they would like to have back. So I guess those are probably the main ones for me. I think I got to everyone there. I might have missed one or two, but who do you have on your list?
So let's talk about Brooklyn here. You mentioned then they also are going to have a large tax payment, and you mentioned Torian Prince as someone that they could try to move. Caris LeVert, I think they want to keep him, but also how well he fits with Kyrie and Spencer Dinwiddie and Kevin Durant. You really need all four of those guys as shot creators. Maybe they'd want to get someone else. I mean, if they were sane, they'd want to just dump DeAndre Jordan and his $10 million this year and basically $10 million a year the next 2 years, but they can't do that because KD and Kyrie Irving wanted to play with him. And
because DeAndre has really to good. Start ahead of Jared Allen, right?
Although, in fairness, KD and Kyrie did give up a bunch of money so they could sign him and pay him a lot of money, so that they clearly would not be happy if he gets moved. And the Nets do have their draft picks going forward here. Prince has two more years at basically $13 million a year. I mean, I think they would want to see how he looks playing next to all these guys first. Like, they obviously believed in him to some extent. We didn't get to see him in the bubble at all due to his COVID analysis, but you believe that that's like a really bad deal for him at $13 million a year for 2 years?
Well, I mean, he wasn't good in Atlanta before they acquired him. He wasn't good for them last year, and I just don't see how he's going to play a major role unless Durant gets hurt again. I do think in general with a team like this, you probably want to see how it looks with everybody before you start moving too many pieces around. Because again, you have until the trade deadline to get yourself under. So you don't necessarily have to do it right now. The thing in Brooklyn's case, the best thing they have to trade to get themselves under is the 19th pick in the draft this year. So do they use that? And even if it's not a question of getting themselves under the tax, it's just a question of saving themselves a bunch of money so they can maybe sign some other players, maybe use their full mid-level and still spend up to the apron where they're over the tax, but get themselves another player that way. So in terms of optionality, I think doing something with Prince would be helpful for them, but I don't know. It's tough though if you're a GM, right? Like if you sign this deal a year ago and then you're going to turn around and give up a first to get rid of it. I don't think that looks really good at City Hall. So now I'm wondering, as I think about that element of it, they probably go to the trade deadline before they do something like that.
Yeah, I would imagine we'll see some of these dumping ground trades done that way, because you also then, I mean, the actual cash that you're paying players is more important than ever with the uncertain economic situation. And so if you've paid a guy's salary for 2/3 of the year and then you trade him, it's a lot easier to get away with that, it seems like to me.
I mean, that's the math that like Houston has used that the last couple of years, where they pay a guy for 2/3 of the year, then pay somebody to take his salary so he doesn't count against their tax.
A few others that stick out to me are on teams that are going to be trying to avoid the tax and still use the full mid-level exception. Ed Davis really pops out as one to me.
Yes.
On Utah there. He's out of the rotation. He's due $5 million this year. And if they want to re-sign Jordan Clarkson, they may even be close to the tax there. And they'll just want to have some more maneuvering room to maybe sign some low-level guys as well. That's a big one. And what do you think the price is if you just want to dump Ed Davis – $5 million, is that
going to
be harder?
Yeah, you should be able to do that. You should be able to do that with seconds. I don't think you have to give up. I mean, that'd be crazy to give up a first round pick just to dump $5 million, especially when you're already not in the tax.
If you can essentially pay his salary.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You have the ability to put cash in trades, and you can pay 2/3 of that just with the cash. So now there's still the value to the other team of they have to put it on their cap. And especially if they're a room team, which they kind of have to be or have an exception, they have to use that to take him in. So, there's that angle too, even if they put the cash in. But then the other angle of it is, could you also do something where you trade Ed Davis and like a couple of their minimum guys and a first and get like a $10 million player who's actually good?
Actually good players. Yes. That is something that they should be looking more on.
They should do more deals like that. Get good players. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of the straight dump. And that may be easier for teams like that. But if the Jazz want to open up some more space outside of Clarkson, then that's a consideration there as well. How about?
I mean, we actually had a similar situation to that. Now that I think about it, because we had Ben McLemore at almost the exact same number, and what we could have done is just paid somebody to take him. What we didn't said was added Deontay Davis and I can't even remember if we did
Garrett
one or
Temple,
two seconds.
Right?
Yeah, and got Garrett Temple back, exactly.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty good trade for you guys, actually. I mean, because historically, it's a second, 2 seconds to jump someone in that $5 to $7 million range. But to get someone who can play a little bit as well. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the type of trade that a lot of teams will be trying to do. You're right. How about Rodney Magruder for the Clippers?
Yeah, I mean, he had no role this year at all. You have Kawhi and PG and probably Morris coming back too at the small forward spot. I think that's one they need to move on from.
Yeah, and there now Ballmer has plenty of money, obviously, but there's no reason to go into the tax and start your repeater tax clock for. Oh, I guess they're going to be in the tax regardless, though, aren't they? If they bring back Montrezl Harrell,
I mean, Harrell, Morris, and the full mid-level, like, they can do two of the three, but they can't do all three, right? And, that's going to be I think it's easier to not bring back Harrell now that they made the coaching change, that they'll probably go all in with Zubats as a starter and re-sign Morris. So they could end up under the tax if they did something with Magruder at that point.
Yeah, I mean, they'd still need something at backup center. I mean, unless they think Fiondo, Kevin Gayle can step into that role, which maybe he could. I don't know.
I would not bet on that at this point.
You don't like him?
Just the G League performance and I thought it was a reasonable pick at the time, so I'm not going to like totally dump on it now. But yeah, he did not have an impressive rookie year.
So here's another one for you, and it's rare that we would have a player who hasn't even technically started his rookie scale extension yet here, but Buddy Hield clearly wants out of Sacramento.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, the financial considerations are not as big there because they've still got about $10 million under the tax. Even if they re-sign Bogdanović for a reasonable number, they opened up some space there with the moves that they made at the trade deadline, getting off of Dedmon. But is there a destination for Buddy Hield? I mean, just dumping him. Well, let's start with this. This is probably a good way to frame this conversation. Buddy Hield is worth how much per year over the next 4 years to you?
$14 million.
Okay, so he's making about 21 or so. Declining salary, starts pretty high. He goes down throughout the life of that. So that's not that awful.
It's not an atrocious contract.
Yeah,
that wasn't a scientific $14 million. That was me, doing this $14 million. But yeah,
I agree with you.
It's a bad contract, but it's not horrendous.
Yeah, he's a starter potentially on a bad team, but probably has to come off the bench on a good team because of his defense.
Yeah, and then I think the other thing is he probably appears more valuable if you put him in a better position to succeed. Like having him run 50 pick and rolls with the second unit every game because you don't want to run anything through Corey Joseph is not the optimal usage for him, right?
No, that's correct. I agree there. So, so you're talking about essentially, $40 million No, probably not even that. Maybe $30 million out of his 86. That's kind of dead money. You know, so yeah. Is that, if they attached a first round pick to him, could they get an expiring contract for him this year? I think they probably could.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's some teams that could talk themselves into his skill set. I was actually floating him the other day as a possibility in Memphis.
Interesting one in Memphis. I actually wonder a little bit if they can accommodate his, I mean, how do they accommodate his number?
Yeah, it would have to be like Jang in the deal, maybe Kyle Anderson as yeah. well. But it yeah. just, it vaporizes their 21 cap space.
Yeah, which, I mean, then they can't get Giannis. The what, he's not coming? Then I think the other one where you wonder about the fit would be Atlanta, because they could take that contract lickety split, right, with all the cap room they have, and yeah. They need more threats around Trae Young. Obviously won't help their defense any, but their wings really struggled to give them a lift last year, and having that shooting around Trae I think would be really potent.
Couple other guys, JaVale McGee, I think is someone that the Lakers might want to try to move on from, particularly so they can open up some more space for their exceptions. Just to have him at $4 million doesn't make a ton of sense to me. He's clearly going to opt in, I would think, to his $4 million.
I do think he probably opts in, although, I mean, he was pretty good this year. Like, it wouldn't be crazy to opt out. It just seems like there's not a lot of ceiling in him opting out, because he's a, you know, he's a random center, and random centers don't get paid anymore. Because it's not 2016. I think you're probably right there. Although if Dwight doesn't come back, maybe they just keep JaVale.
Yeah, that's a good point, that next year's team may not have Dwight Howard on it. You mentioned Kevon Looney in Golden State, and Robin Lopez, Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, with they're so close to the tax line, if they want to bring in any more help, he's kind of the guy that has to go.
Well, now, apparently ownership has assured Giannis that they will pay the tax. Although, my guess would be they're going to pay, like, you know, they'll be like $3 million into the tax or something like that. Or maybe, yeah. maybe they'll even use the mid-level so they're hard capped at $6 million above the tax and there's only so much that they can do, right? Like, that'll be their excuse yeah. for not yeah. going in deeper.
Yeah. And again, the other option Milwaukee has is not just dumping Rolo, it's putting him in that pick at 24 in a trade and try to get another player.
So we could wrap up here. We'll do just a straight Q&A starting in just a second here, but no conversation about dumping salary would be complete without the Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, not at all. Al Horford would be the main one, right?
So they've got 9 players under contract for next year and already are $17 million into the tax payment of $38 million, total team salary $189 million.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of, like, Mike Scott, for example, at $5 million, Zaire Smith at $3 million. I mean, those guys have got to be gone, right?
You would think so, yeah. And you wonder if that's part of, they have 4 second round picks in this draft, including 2 in the 30s, you know? Will they, does the 36th pick get you to take, you know, will somebody be persuaded to take pick 36 and take Mike Scott? I mean, that's buying the pick for $5 million. That's like kind of in line with what teams have paid, right? So is that something that we could see?
Yeah, just as Sam Hinkie envisioned, right? Let's acquire all these second round picks so we can pay these guys the rookie minimum and save luxury tax money on a 48 win team. Right?
Yeah, that, exactly.
Finally, his vision has come full circle.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they made some mistakes building this team, and now, I mean, that Horford one is interesting because he's not a bad player, but they're paying him for an 18-minute role basically, and it's $27 million a year. Like, you can't do that in the front court. There's just not enough left to fill out the rest of your positions. And what you really want to do is be able to trade big for small with him. And you just wonder where the opportunities are going to be to do that.
Big thanks and a big plug to Nate Duncan and John Hollinger, the Hollinger and Duncan podcast. Really, this time of year, getting into the offseason, that is required listening at this point. I know there's other podcasts out there that maybe you were listening to during the playoffs for the game-by-game stuff, but for the off-the-court stuff, it is must-listen material for you guys, and I'm not just saying that. As a company, guy. But that'll do it for our show today. I'm your host, Matt Shook. Now, tell your smart device, play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you guys later.